We're in Japan on the trail of the most sought-after fish in the world, bluefin tuna. The Japanese are in love with it, and it's sold in the best sushi restaurants on the planet. But how did a fish once sold as cat food become so highly prized? And what can be done to stop these giants of the ocean being fished to extinction?
When you put it in your mouth, it melts away and you can feel the sweetness.
Just underneath the surface there, that looked like a really big fish.
Totally soft, melt in your mouth, fat.
The time has long passed for us to be able to eat bluefin tuna with a clear conscience.
In Japan, there's a fish that people love eating more than any other. Walk into any sushi restaurant in Tokyo and it's on the menu. Thick cuts of deep red tuna. But for the best restaurants, not just any tuna will do. It's the meat of the bluefin tuna, the giant species that lives in the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans, that's the most highly prized. The Japanese eat about 80% of the bluefin tuna caught around the world each year. I wanted to find out why this fish, above all others, was so beloved in Japan. And where better to start than Tsukiji Fish Market in Tokyo? If you've eaten bluefin tuna, there's a good chance it came through this very market.
Tsukiji Market has been here for 82 years already. It is a very, very historical place in Tokyo. This market has anything related to seafood.
Shinji Sakamoto used to work here at Tsukiji Fish Market as a buyer, and he agreed to show me round.
So market is always busy, basically doesn't sleep at all. Workers come here around 2 a.m. and to get prepared for auction, and then the chef comes here around 5 a.m.
So people are here from 2 a.m. in the morning to get ready for the big auctions, which is where they're going to make their money. It's where people are going to find those high-quality, high-value fish that they can sell on to restaurateurs.
Exactly, yes. So to evaluate all the different seafood, attend the auction and finish buying around 5 a.m. so that they can start the business for chefs.
In particular, if you look around all the stalls, you see that tuna is the thing that's on sale in a lot of the restaurants around this market. Tuna is the big industry in this market, isn't it?
Tuna is a big deal. So that's why, the tuna vendors are really, really special here. Tuna vendors only focus on tuna, and they've been doing their work all entire life only for tuna. So that's why they are really special.
In Tsukiji, people talk about bluefin tuna like it's gold or oil. A single bluefin sells for thousands of dollars. In fact, the most expensive fish of all time was a bluefin tuna sold here in 2013 for $1.8 million. And the industry stretches far beyond Japanese waters. So we're just going into the part of the market where they auction off the huge tuna carcasses. Behind me there's a truck where they're unloading dozens of frozen carcasses of tuna. Shinji, what kind of tuna is that?
So now we are watching the super frozen tuna, which is their tuna frozen on the boat after immunity caught. So that then it's deep freezing, so it goes minus 60 Celsius degrees.
Needless to say, there's a lot of fish around here. I'm actually stood next to a big pile of frozen tuna carcasses. There's a guy to my left who's cutting up a huge tuna carcass, a huge frozen tuna carcass with a massive bandsaw. You might be able to hear it behind me. Next to the tuna auction house are stalls where vendors are selling their fish in bite-sized pieces. Shinji takes me there to see what wild-caught bluefin tuna looks like on the plate. Now, let's be clear, this isn't the same tuna that you'd find in a can in your local supermarket. That's usually something like skipjack tuna, which is a fairly abundant species of tuna. This is bluefin. It's rare. It makes up about 1% of all the tuna landed around the world. And it's the best quality meat and the most valuable meat. It's reserved for sushi, raw cuts served on a bed of rice, or sashimi. That's thick cuts of raw meat. And the best cuts are from the belly of the tuna, because that's the fattiest, and that's what Shinji wants to show me. This is bluefin. This looks quite good. Is this good quality tuna?
Yeah, this is my favorite tuna bender, and this is the best. You know when you eat it.
Can you tell from looking at it that this is going to be tasty tuna?
Yeah, you know, as you see, you know, when you see the fish, basically it looks like a dark color, right? The red part is very dark color, but you see the fat inside, you know.
It's sort of a deep red color to the meat. It's almost looks like beef or something, doesn't it?
Yeah.
As you say, there's that marbled sort of fatty effect on it.
You want to try them?
Sure, let's try some. We've looked at lots of tuna. Let's have a taste. Okay, so this is a cube of bluefin tuna on a stick. A little bit of soy sauce in there.
Yes.
So which part of the tuna has this come from?
This is one fatty part. So a chitoro, which is a medium fatty part from the backbone, but around the skin side, so that it has a lot of fat in it.
And it's the fat that makes it taste so good.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to try this. I'm going to try this small one. That looks really tasty. Okay, let's try it out. Mmm. You can really... It's really melting your mouth, isn't it? It kind of really falls apart really easily. You can feel the fat in it as well. So there's a real texture.
Soundness of the tuna.
Quite a strong flavor for a fish, isn't it?
Exactly. This is what we like. Makes me smile. A lot of smile.
Yeah?
Makes a lot of smile.
Now, I'm no professional food critic, so let's get a better description of what really good bluefin tuna tastes like from an expert.
Okay, thanks for waiting. Please come in. Yeah.
How was the lesson?
Yes, it was fun.
Ayuko Akiyama is a food writer and trained as a sushi chef in Tokyo.
A little bit sourness, very light sourness, and like a balanced oil. And also when you chew it in the mouth, you feel like a sweetness onto your palates. That's the best tuna we describe, and it's kind of like a little bit like a, how can I say, it's more like sticky texture when you put that in your mouth. That's the best tuna. It's like a very good beef. That's probably the reason why, you know, people worship the tuna like a marble beef. When you put it in your mouth, it melts away and you can feel the sweetness.
Why is tuna, and particularly bluefin tuna, become so popular among sushi and sashimi eaters in Japan?
Well, first, when sushi was popular as a street food, tuna was not the king of the ingredients. Tuna was too oily, kind of like fish they throw away. But, you know, people just realized that tuna is so nice and fatty. Since then, I think psychologically, tuna is the best fish. And even like New Year, we eat tuna for like a gathering or party.
So do you think it deserves its reputation as the most prized fish?
Yes, I think so. That's why it's very expensive.
You can fish bluefin tuna in Japanese waters, but Japan's love of the fish means it gets through about 30,000 tons of it every year. So that means it's got to ship it from the Atlantic and the Pacific Oceans. It's sold everywhere, from high-end restaurants to supermarkets. Everyone seems to agree that when it comes to sushi, bluefin is the king. But it didn't always used to be this way.
My name is Trevor Corson, and I'm sitting in the BBC studio in New York in Lower Manhattan. And I'm the author of The Story of Sushi, an unlikely saga of raw fish and rice.
Trevor Corson is an American who loves sushi.
The most typical Japanese type of sushi, generally, in the old days, was made up of fish that had interesting textures. That included shellfish, clams, things that were crunchy. All of those different crunchy, chewy, whatever textures were considered an interesting feature of sushi. Over the course of the past 100 years, this has been completely reversed. So today, the emphasis on bluefin tuna is primarily an emphasis on the culinary value of succulence. Totally soft, melt-in-your-mouth fat.
Unlike many sushi lovers today, Trevor isn't too keen on bluefin tuna. It turns out it's not the traditional Japanese food it's made out to be.
When I started looking into the history of tuna in Japan, I was very surprised to discover that it had not been considered at all a desirable fish to eat by the Japanese 100 years ago. It was considered to be very smelly and bloody, and it would go bad easily. The fish that Japanese people tended to prize were much different. They were small, light-fleshed fish with delicate flavors and some texture. You know, they liked clams, they liked squid, they liked small white fish. The transformation of tuna from disgusting fish that no one would eat to the pinnacle of fine Japanese cuisine happened fairly quickly over the course of the 20th century, over several decades. There are a few things we can look at to help explain why this could have happened. One of them is the increasing Western influence on Japan, culminating with the end of World War II and the American occupation of Japan in the late 40s and 50s. And that's when more Western-style diets started to impact Japan a bit, eating red meat, eating beef, eating fattier cuts of meat. Another thing that we can see happen was the result of Japan's high-tech export economy peaking in the 1970s when they were flying these huge plane loads of electronics manufactured in Japan over to the U.S. in particular, and those planes were going back empty. And Japan Airlines and an executive in their cargo division, whose job it was to find products to put in those planes going back to Japan so that the cargo division of Japan Airlines could make more money. He looked all over the place for all kinds of stuff to put in those planes, couldn't really find much in North America that he thought Japanese would be that interested in, but he discovered a bunch of sport fishermen, particularly off the east coast of the U.S. and Canada, that would catch these huge bluefin tuna for sport, have their photo taken with them, and then send them to the town dump. He thought, maybe we can convince these sport fishermen to sell these fish to us. The fishermen in North America thought he was crazy. Who would want to eat this stuff? And then he had to figure out a technology for getting these huge fresh fish flown to Japan quickly enough that they would be a viable fresh raw fish product for the Japanese sushi market.
The dramatic rise of bluefin tuna in Japan has come at a time when Japanese cuisine has expanded across the world. If tuna started out as a Western import in Japan, it's now being exported to North America, to Europe, and developing parts of Asia as sushi restaurants spring up in new cities. But that has come at a huge cost to the fish themselves. Callum Roberts is a marine conservation expert at the University of York in the UK.
The most concern at the moment focuses on the North Pacific bluefin tuna. That population is considered to have declined by 97% from its unfished status. So it's not just overfished. This is a species that is at real risk of extinction now. Atlantic bluefin tuna, for example, used to be incredibly abundant, even to the extent that tuna would come into the North Sea and also off the Norwegian coast, where tens of thousands of fish were caught every year. Bluefin tuna does not occur in the North Sea any longer.
Who's responsible for the majority of that fishing, and where's that fish going?
The Pacific bluefin tuna in the North Pacific, the one that has declined by 97%, that is being fished largely by Japan, and a lot of that decline really has to be landed at the doorstep of the Japanese fishery.
How long would you give the North Pacific bluefin, if it was being fished at current rates, how long left until it becomes virtually extinct?
Well, I think we're no more than a decade or 15 years away from that point at the most. The time has long passed for us to be able to eat bluefin tuna with a clear conscience. I think what bluefin tuna needs across the world is a break from fishing.
You're listening to The Food Chain on the BBC World Service with me, Edwin Lane. We've been hearing about how the Japanese love of bluefin tuna has put this fish firmly on the endangered species list. It's clear that the demand for rare bluefin tuna isn't going anywhere. So how do you satisfy this vast appetite for the fish without fishing it to the edge of extinction? I know what you're thinking at this point. Why not farm it? We've farmed other species of fish, like salmon, for example. Well, there have been efforts recently in Japan and elsewhere to farm tuna, but it's not always been that straightforward. To find out about the challenges of that, I had to get out of Tokyo, take a long train ride down the coast of Japan. We've just got off the train at the coastal town of Kushimoto in Wakayama province here in Japan. We've been riding through miles of rugged coastal landscape. Behind me, I can see the green mountains just poking out of the mist, and in front of me, the Pacific Ocean. It feels a long way from the metropolis of Tokyo. We're here to meet Professor Yoshifumi Sawada. He's a man who's devoted much of his career to what's been described as the holy grail of aquaculture, farming expensive bluefin tuna.
This is a place of the southernmost place of the Honshu Island of Japan. Yeah. This is historically the tuna fishing here. And the water quality is very good. That is very important for this tuna aquaculture project here.
Professor Sawada works for the Fisheries Laboratory at Kindai University. Since the 1970s, it's been researching how to rear bluefin tuna from eggs to full-grown adults in captivity before selling them on to restaurants and retailers. He took me out on a small boat to take a look at the operation. So we're just heading out into the bay now, and we're surrounded by these small islands, small green islands sticking out of the grey water. We're just between the mainland and the biggest island, Oshima, where the laboratory for the tuna farming is based, and we're just pulling up now to these huge circular cages. It looks like the tops of cages that are submerged into the bay here. And these are the cages where the tuna is kept while it's bred. So let's get a little bit closer in our boat and see if we can spot one or two of them. We've moored up right on the side of one of these huge circular pens that are out here in the bay, and inside the water's quite choppy. It's a bit like Jurassic Park, isn't it? I'm wondering whether I can see them or not, but I don't think I can. I can kind of see there's some little waves just kind of popping up inside these cages. That's very difficult to tell if... Oh, I saw a glimpse of the flash of silver just underneath the surface there. That looked like a really big fish.
Fishes are 30 to 40 kilogram in body weight.
So that would be what, about 1 or 2 meters long?
Yeah, 1.2 meter to 1.5 meter long.
And what species? Are these a bluefin tuna?
Yes, only the bluefin tuna we are farming.
So we've got a box of mackerel there that we're going to use a spade to try and throw in and see if we can entice some tuna. Do they know that they're going to get fed now? Can they tell?
They are waiting for us because usually they are swimming at the middle of the depths. But when the feed vessel comes, they rise up to the surface.
So they're splashing around now as they're grabbing the mackerel as they get thrown in. Oh, there we go. We saw a couple of fins. Oh, you can just catch the slightly yellow fins on their backs. You can see them as they're circling around. They're really beautiful fish.
If you dive into the cages underwater, we can see the very brilliant blue color of the body. That is the reason of the name of the bluefin tuna.
How much of this do they eat? I mean, what's their appetite like?
That is a very big problem, the cost of the feed. Half of the cost of the production is feed cost. They gain 1 kilogram body weight by eating 10 to 15 kilogram fishes. That is a very big problem of the tuna aquaculture. We'd like to replace fishes to other materials, such as crops.
You'd like to make some vegetarian bluefin tuna?
Yes. Our ultimate goal is to make our tunas to be vegetarian.
So after looking at all those dead and frozen tuna in the fish markets at the Tsukiji in Tokyo, we've finally been able to see some live swimming around tuna, and they really are fantastic looking animals. It's kind of no surprise that they sort of elicit so much devotion among many Japanese people, not just in the form of sushi and sashimi, but even when they're alive too. In one sense, Kindai University's bluefin tuna farms have been a success. Rearing tuna from eggs to adults is a scientific achievement, and it hopes that by 2020, about 5% of the domestic bluefin market will come from its farms. But there are challenges as well. About 90% of farmed bluefin tuna die before they reach adulthood. The global trade for bluefin is worth about $2 billion a year, so it sounds like a good business prospect. But can it help arrest the massive slide in wild bluefin numbers? Callum Roberts again.
I don't think farming tuna is part of the solution to arresting the decline. The responsibility for that really lies at the feet of the industry. Tuna farming is an incredibly expensive business. It's technically very tricky, but one of the major concerns is that it consumes a vast amount of fish from the oceans, which are used as feed. So to produce 1 kilogram of bluefin tuna in a farm will take something like 20 kilos of wild-caught fish fed to that. They're voracious predators. It's never going to be more than a boutique fishery, a boutique solution for people who have very high incomes and can afford to spend lavishly on the fish that they're eating.
I've come back to Tokyo now, and I've come to the sushi restaurant district of downtown Tokyo. Lots of very high-end sushi restaurants here, but the one I'm in is quite special because it's actually run by Kindai University's Fisheries Laboratory, and they serve only farmed fish, including the farmed tuna that Professor Sawada was rearing in those pens we saw down in Wakayama. So I've ordered some tuna sashimi, thick cuts of raw tuna, just to see how it compares really to the bluefin tuna that I was trying with Shinji at the fish market. So let's give it a go. So I'm going to pick it up with my chopsticks. It looks kind of like a deep uniform red colour, looks classically like raw tuna that you might see on sushi. It's kind of not got the sort of fatty marbled effect of the bluefin that we saw in the fish market, but it still looks delicious. I'm going to try it. Just put a bit of soy sauce on it and a little bit of wasabi. Well, that's really, really nice. I mean, that is absolutely delicious. Kind of really kind of melt in your mouth sort of texture to it, really full of flavor, but you definitely notice the lack of the fat in it. I think it's quite lean tuna, and you notice that difference between that and the kind of really fatty wild tuna that we were trying in the market. I think it tastes great, but I'm not a sushi expert, I'm not a tuna expert, and there's a real question still about whether farmed tuna can really compete with wild tuna when it comes to the high-end sushi restaurants that Japan is famous for. Kindai University currently ships around 70 tons of farmed bluefin to the markets every year, but that's nothing compared with the 30,000 tons eaten by the Japanese every year. And with numbers of North Pacific bluefin at just 3% of their previous highs, there's a sense that time is running out. But for chefs like Ayuko Akiyama, there's no comparison between farmed tuna and the wild bluefin she's used to. At the moment, there's a real concern, and there has been for a few years, about overfishing of tuna. Do you think it would be easy to stop Japanese people eating as much tuna?
I don't think so. Now we are starting farming, and farming is getting very successful, but a little bit too oily. So I think cheap restaurant or like a train sushi places, they use like a farmed tuna, but still like at the very good places, they use wild tuna.
Is there a sense that people know that they're eating something that's rare and quite difficult to find, and that makes it somehow more pleasurable to eat?
Yeah, I could say that too, yeah. And also bluefin tuna is a kind of like extinguishing.
It's becoming extinct.
Yes. So people think, you know, if you don't eat tuna, bluefin tuna now, you will never get that in the future, or the price will be up in the future after 10 years. So people just rush.
So the fact that bluefin tuna is endangered actually makes it more attractive for people to eat?
Of course, I think so. If they said bluefin tuna will disappear, people will try to get it now.
You wouldn't be encouraged to stop eat less tuna to help the fish stocks?
No, I cannot I'll stop myself eating tuna.
According to sushi aficionado Trevor Corson, the answer might exist in the history of sushi itself. It's always been a cuisine, he says, in a state of flux. Tuna is a very easy fish to like. Perhaps the answer lies in getting sushi eaters to expand their palates a little bit.
When I started to understand the true history of sushi, and when I also looked around and saw bluefin tuna are being overfished because of this huge global sushi trade and this kind of fetish we've developed for these fatty cuts of tuna, I thought, wait a second, what would happen if I stopped eating bluefin? And my sushi eating experience has become far more interesting. The form that sushi has taken, the ingredients that have appeared in it have constantly been changing and evolving in fascinating and interesting and delicious ways. So actually, there's an opportunity here, I think, for everyone to rediscover sushi by rediscovering a much wider variety of seasonal and local ingredients.
And that's all from this week's edition of The Food Chain on the BBC World Service. You can find us on social media by using the hashtag BBCFoodChain. Get in touch with your views. But for now, from producer Sarah Trenor, editor Kent DePinto, and me, Edwin Lane, thanks for listening and join us again next week.